Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it is my great pleasure to introduce you to the festival's 2014 season, Around Dvorak. Music at Menlo's 2014 season explores dual facets of the unfolding of Western music throughout the classical and romantic eras and into the 20th century. Catalyzed by a lineage of composers from Haydn and Mozart, through Schubert and Brahms, to Schoenberg, Webern, and Berg a generation later, Vienna emerged as the epicenter of a dynamic musical tradition that remains central to the canon today. Meanwhile, starting in the latter half of the 19th century, the folk traditions of Hungary, Romania, and the Czech lands permeated Western classical music, as composers like Bedřich Smetana, Leoš Janáček, Béla Bartók, and Zoltán Kodály awakened to the richness of their own musical heritage and sought to cultivate a distinct musical voice. At the center of this dialectic was Antonín Dvořák, the self-described simple Czech musicant who likewise possessed the romantic ferocity of his mentor, Johannes Brahms. No other composer so fluently integrated the dual traditions of Western classicism and Central European folk music, developing a distinct musical language whose influence would be felt as far as the United States. This season, Music at Menlo offers 8 colorful concert programs that revolve around Dvorak, taking listeners on a thrilling journey between Vienna, Prague, and other fascinating musical destinations along the way. Audio notes are designed to enhance your enjoyment and deepen your appreciation of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by artistic co-director Wu Han, Audio Notes author and producer Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists to offer historical and cultural context and a variety of perspectives on this summer's concert programs. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the festival. Alongside Dvořák and his countrymen, who were fueled by their interest in Czech folk traditions, the composers of neighboring Hungary likewise mined the richness of their own musical heritage. Most famously, Béla Bartók, regarded today as the first ethnomusicologist, and his colleague Zoltán Kodály researched and recorded peasant music with the aim of developing a distinctively Hungarian musical identity. On either side of Bartók and Kodály's chapter in the development of Hungarian music, Franz Liszt and Ernő Dohnányi respectively wedded the late Romantic traditions with their own singular voices. George Ligeti, one of the 20th century's most inventive enfant terrible, extended the legacy of Hungarian music with a daringly modern flair.
The Hungarian pianist and composer Franz Liszt was one of the defining figures of the Romantic era. Musicologist Alan Walker has written that Liszt, quote, contained in his character more of the ideals and aspirations of the 19th century than any other major musician, end quote. Liszt lived from 1811 to 1886, and in the latter half of the 19th century became the most influential composer of the New German School, the progressive vanguard of Western music in the mid-19th century that included Richard Wagner and Hector Berlioz. As a composer, Liszt developed radical new methods of thematic development and boldly experimented with harmony and form. One of his most significant innovations was the development of the symphonic poem, an orchestral form that would become one of the late Romantic period's quintessential genres. Besides his activities as a composer, Liszt was also the most acclaimed piano virtuoso of his generation. And another of his most important contributions lies in his development of piano technique through his performance and pedagogy, as well as in his compositions for piano. Liszt composed his Grand Duo Concertant for violin and piano in 1835 on a romance by the French violinist and composer Charles-Philippe Lafont. Though Lafont was unremarkable as a composer, he was widely hailed as one of the greatest violin virtuosos of his day. And in the compositional realm, he worked with such collaborators as the Bohemian pianist and composer Ignaz Moscheles to produce a number of virtuoso showpieces, published as Duos Concertants, that represented the finest of his output, albeit with some help. It's possible that Lafont likewise collaborated in some capacity with Liszt on this Grand Duo Concertant. Whether Liszt invited any input or not, the work's instrumental brilliance certainly places it in the virtuoso repertoire that Lafont was known for. The Grand Duo Concertant begins with an extended fantasia-like introduction. After a sequence of stoic chords in the piano, the violin makes a triumphant ascent from its lowest to its highest register. And then, a brief but impassioned recitative, answered again by the piano's stoicism. The piano assumes a recitative-like role, and a semi-operatic dialogue ensues between piano and violin. The drama continues to percolate, but in just that brief moment, Liszt has planted the seed for the work's main theme, a sweet, almost naive melody, introduced by the violin above the simplest of piano accompaniments. Four variations on this theme follow. The first transforms the theme into whimsical salon music. The second variation offers the pianist a soloistic turn, wrapping finger-twisting runs around the theme, plucked quietly by the violin and echoed by the left hand of the piano. The third variation transforms the theme into a pastoral idyll. This dreamlike reverie gives way to a more up-tempo music. After a hot-blooded cadenza, comes the fourth and final variation, a devilish tarantella. The whirling tarantella leads seamlessly into the victorious finale. Thank you. Béla Bartók ranks alongside the likes of Claude Debussy, Igor Stravinsky, and Arnold Schoenberg as one of the most original and influential composers of the 20th century. His viscerally compelling musical language drew from a wide range of influences, from Bach and Beethoven to his own contemporaries and even American jazz. Alongside these, another major aspect of Bartók's art that's perhaps of most lasting significance is his interest in and avid championship of Central European folk music. Bartók is generally regarded as history's first ethnomusicologist. He traveled extensively throughout the Central European countryside, listening to and recording Hungarian, Romanian, and Slovak peasant music. And his deep study of this music was the most important influence on his own work. His absorption of peasant music and his integration of it into many of his scores uniquely distinguish his musical language and have established Bartók as the central figure of modern Hungarian music. Bartók composed his 44 duos for two violins in 1931 at the request of the German violin instructor Erich Dofflein. Dofflein had sought permission to set selections of Bartók's piano cycle For Children in his own volume of violin pedagogical pieces. Bartók was intrigued by Dofflein's project, which he saw as a dual opportunity to provide young musicians with useful technical studies, as well as to introduce them to folk music from various cultures. Bartók offered instead to compose a new series of violin duos, graded from beginner to advanced, for Dofflein's collection, drawing from Romanian, Ruthenian, Serbian, Ukrainian, Hungarian, Slovak, and Arabic folk music. This summer, we'll hear a selection of 12 of Bartók's 44 duos. Violinist Alexander Sitkovitsky.
About Bartók, it's interesting because when I first came, you know, I was brought over to United Kingdom by Yehudi Menuhin when I was 7 years old to go to study at his school. And I was incredibly fortunate that I had the chance to play with Mr. Menuhin also a little bit when I was very young. And we played Bartók duos. You know, he was such a champion of Bartók. And for him, Bartók was one of the greatest, most important composers and musical personalities of the 20th century. And he introduced me to Bartók. I had never really come across him. I mean, as a kid, I hadn't really come across him. It wasn't, there's not so much repertoire, I guess, from Bartók that you can grasp at a young age, apart from the duos. And the wonderful thing about the duos is that you can really play them at any age because they're not difficult. But at the same time, they're so great. And some of them are incredibly deep also musically. So you can come back to them at any age and really find something very exciting to play in them. I mean, that's really, again, where Bartók's folk roots are coming to the fore, because, you know, the violin is, on top of being an instrument in classical music, you know, the fiddle is also the most common instrument of all folk music in all countries, you know, Ireland, United States, and everywhere. Hungary, you know, with the whole gypsy violin tradition. So I think it's the instrument that comes most naturally to creating a folk-sounding world.
All but two of the 44 duos are based on actual folk melodies. The 35th duo doesn't use an authentic folk melody, but is based on the Ruthenian kolomeika, a lively folk dance. The first duo that Bartók composed for Dofflein's manual ultimately became, on account of its level of difficulty, the last of the 44, the exotic Transylvanian dance.
also the sound, I think, you know, one doesn't play them maybe in such a organized classical way. You can go a little bit wild with some of them. And I think that the sound world that it creates is just, you know, I can imagine, you know, two folk musicians in a village somewhere and, you know, playing for the other, you know, for the community and playing for themselves. It's, I think they're very personal, these duos, which is, you know, it also works in the concert hall, but I think it's, hopefully it'll be fun and it'll be, I think it's something that the two of us will enjoy playing a lot with each other, and then hopefully the audience will enjoy it as well.
Alongside his countryman and close friend and colleague, Béla Bartók, the Hungarian composer Zoltán Kodály is remembered both as one of the most distinctive compositional voices of his generation and as one of the 20th century's most important ethnomusicologists. He was born in 1882 and grew up in the Hungarian countryside, thus encountering his country's folk music point blank throughout his formative years. This while concurrently becoming proficient at the piano, violin, viola, and cello, and acquiring a solid foundation in the classical repertoire. Bartók and Kodály traveled the Hungarian countryside, tirelessly collecting folk music, on which each based his own musical language. More broadly, their work laid the foundation for the development of a Hungarian voice in classical music. Kodály once said of his and Bartók's ethnomusicological work, quote, "The vision of an educated Hungary, reborn from the people, rose before us. We decided to devote our lives to its realization." End quote. In addition to his accomplishments as an ethnomusicologist and educator, the realization of Kodály's vision is manifested, most of all, in his music. In Bartók's words, quote, "If I were to name the composer whose works are the most perfect embodiment of the Hungarian spirit, I would answer Kodály. His work proves his faith in the Hungarian spirit. The obvious explanation is that all Kodály's composing activity is rooted only in Hungarian soil. But the deep inner reason is his unshakable faith and trust in the constructive power and future of his people." End quote. Kodály composed his Opus 12 Serenade for two violins and viola in 1920. The serenade comprises three movements, beginning with an ebullient allegramente. Kodály biographer Laszlo Eza imagined an allegorical folktale to chart the emotional progression of the serenade. At the start, Eza writes, we hear three musicians playing a serenade beneath a woman's window. Then comes a song from the lover. Eza continues, the second movement opens with a dialogue between the lover, viola, and his mistress, first violin, while the tremolos of the second violin suggest the atmosphere of night. To the lover's pleading, Eza suggests, the woman replies with laughter, coyness gradually turning into passionate rejection. Thank you. Validating Isa's metaphoric interpretation of the serenade, Kodály marks this next passage to be played espressivo in the viola, indifferente in the first violin. The main theme from the first movement returns. Isa suggests, at this point, the lover dismisses the musicians. Whereupon the woman relents. And it is now the man who laughs. The final movement reflects Kodály's fascination with Hungarian folk music, both in its rustic, dance-like rhythm and in its harmonic language. Lastly, Azar writes, the third movement confirms the understanding between lover and mistress, the light-hearted banter between viola and violin developing into a song of satisfied love, and the tale is brought to an end with an invigorating dance. Unquestionably one of the most singular compositional voices of the 20th century, the Hungarian composer George Ligeti was regarded by many, by the end of his life, as Western music's greatest living composer. Ligeti's music reflects his assimilation of a wide spectrum of cultural elements. Artistically descendant from Bartók, Ligeti later encountered the avant-garde community emergent at Darmstadt. In the early 1980s, he extended his sonic palette further, immersing himself in non-European musical cultures. His interest in Caribbean, African, and East Asian music complemented the influence of his own Hungarian heritage. But ultimately, regardless of his aesthetic sources, Ligeti was always guided by his personal sound ideal. His music reveals a free-spirited imagination and infinite curiosity given to sonic exploration and adventure. The melodic sensibility, lyricism, and rhythmic flair contained in the Sonata for Solo Cello identify Ligeti as the heir apparent to the modern Hungarian tradition established by Bartók and Kodály. But those two composers' influence notwithstanding, it's Ligeti's own uniquely personal voice that ultimately comes through. The Sonata for Solo Cello illustrates a distinctive feature of Ligeti's compositional technique: his deep understanding of an instrument's character and expressive capabilities. The sonata comprises two movements. The first, titled Dialogo, is indeed a poignant dialogue between two contrasting musical ideas, each one singularly characteristic of the cello. The first, a pair of strummed chords, one sliding into the next. The second, a deeply felt melody, exploiting the cello's vocal expressivity. Thank you. Ligeti composed the Dialogo in 1948, near the end of his studies at the Budapest Academy of Music. Ligeti also admitted that the movement's tenderness owed to his secret amorous feelings for a young cellist and classmate of his at the Academy of Music, who, never aware of Ligeti's feelings, politely thanked him for the gift of the Dialogo and never played it. Several years later, in 1953, Ligeti met the cellist Vera Denesh, who asked him for a cello composition. The Dialogo having never been performed, Ligeti added a virtuosic capriccio to it as a second movement. In the composer's words, quote, "Because the second movement had the ambition to become a sonata movement, I wrote it in sonata form. It is a virtuoso piece in my later style that is closer to Bartok. I was 30 years old when I wrote it. I loved virtuosity and took the playing to the edge of virtuosity, much like Paganini." End quote. The program concludes, fittingly, with music by Ernst von Dohnányi. Excepting perhaps Franz Liszt, Dohnányi must be regarded as the most versatile musician to come from Hungary. He was, in addition to being a great composer, one of history's greatest pianists. Dohnányi was moreover a supremely gifted conductor and an influential teacher and administrator as well, playing a crucial role in building Hungary's musical culture in the first half of the 20th century. But unlike Bartok and Kodály, Dohnányi didn't mine Hungarian folk music for his own compositional vocabulary, which has probably complicated his place in history somewhat, in that he was the chief architect of Hungary's musical landscape, but has inevitably been overshadowed in this respect by those composers who more literally gave Hungary its musical voice. Dohnányi's music, instead, celebrates the romantic legacy of Johannes Brahms and Robert Schumann. His piano quintet in C minor, opus 1, can be heard as a descendant of the quintets of Schumann, Brahms, and Dvorak, which essentially defined the genre. Dohnányi composed his opus 1 piano quintet in 1895 at the age of 18. The work caught the attention of Brahms, at the time Western music's most distinguished musical figure. Brahms's remark that, quote, "I couldn't have written it better myself," end quote, coming from the author of one of the repertoire's seminal piano quintets, was no faint praise.
Dohnányi is one of my favorite composers.
Alexander Sitkovetsky.
I think his tonal language is, I think, quite unique for that time. Really, like, once I know a little bit of his music, I really think that he's quite unique, the way that he writes. There's folk, there's a hint of jazz to me also in some places.
The piano quintet's Allegro first movement begins with a tempestuous first theme, driven by the piano with dense chords above turbulent triplets in the deep bass register. This is music that comes audibly from the romantic tradition of Brahms. The moody key of C minor, famously the key of Mozart and Beethoven's Darkest and Stormiest Nights, is likewise well suited to this music's Sturm und Drang character. This steadily brewing storm quickly erupts into a fortissimo statement of the theme by the full ensemble. The cello leads the ensemble into more lyrical territory, but still haunted by the specter of the first theme. The second theme, in E flat major, offers a comforting foil to the tumultuous first theme. At the end of the exposition, the warmth of E flat major, at least temporarily, overcomes the first theme, transforming it into a wholly new idea.
And it can sound at once so symphonic, and then it can also sound very intimate, and he uses the colors of the instruments so well against each other and then with each other.
The transition from the development section into the recapitulation offers one of the quintet's most startlingly powerful moments. The ephemeral second movement scherzo hints at Dohnányi's Central European heritage. Its rhythmic profile comes from the furiant, a Bohemian folk dance that we encounter frequently in the music of Dvorak. But its rhythmic vigor notwithstanding, this music bears little resemblance to folk music. Its prevailing character is full-voiced Sturm und Drang that continues to evoke the music of Brahms. The viola introduces the poignant theme of the quintet's slow movement, a melody marked by surprising leaps and harmonic turns, and yet as immediately gripping as it is unexpected.
Well, I just think that his music is so beautiful. I think he's an incredible lyricist. The slow movement, so, so beautiful, and really, I think, heart of romanticism.
Following the searingly beautiful third movement, the quintet's finale nods more explicitly to Dohnányi's heritage. The movement begins with a Magyar-inspired theme in 5/4 time. This final movement is a rondo, the classical form in which a central refrain recurs in alternation with contrasting episodes. Dohnányi's episodes are particularly imaginative, ranging from music of sweeping lyricism to a Bachian fugue. Which, if that fugue subject sounds familiar, well, it should. It's a reimagining of the main theme of the Allegro first movement, and Dohnányi uses this fugato episode to set up the finale's dramatic climax. This valedictory reprise of the first movement sets up the quintet's thrilling conclusion. Audio Notes are authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Franz Liszt's Grand Duo Concertant, performed by violinist Chris Nichols and pianist Jonathan Ayerst, and Bartok's Duos for Two Violins, performed by András Kiss and Ferenc Balogh, appear courtesy of Hyperion Records. George Ligeti's Sonata for Solo Cello is performed by Matt Heimowitz and appears courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon. Ernst von Dohnányi's Piano Quintet in C Minor Opus 1 is performed by Ensemble Raro and appears courtesy of Solo Musica. Bedrich Smetana's From the Homeland is performed by violinist Hejin Kim and pianist Ieva Jokubowicz-Jute and appears courtesy of the performers. Erwin Schulhoff's String Sextet is performed by the Salzburg Hyperion Ensemble and appears courtesy of Paladino Music. Kodály's Serenade for Two Violins and Viola, performed by violinists Ani Kavafian and Benjamin Bielman, and violist Paul Neubauer. Dohnányi's Serenade for String Trio, performed by violinist Adele Anthony, violist Paul Neubauer, and cellist Nicholas Alstedt. And Dvorak's Piano Quintet, performed by pianist Jeremy Denk, violinists Ani Kavafian and Kristen Lee, violist Paul Neubauer, and cellist Andreas Brantelid, appear courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.